Okay, so question for you here. On this glittering New Year's Eve, does anybody know how old Jesus was when he died on the cross? I think most people know this answer. Most people know that when Jesus died on the cross, he was 33 years old. Now, I'm just curious, how many people already knew that Jesus was 33 years old? Because it's pretty well known. Here's how we know. We know because in Jesus' time, a rabbi would not begin his public ministry until he was 30. And because Jesus preached for 3 years. The only way we know Jesus preached for 3 years, Gospel of John. It's the only gospel that tells us that Jesus lived through three separate Passovers. All the other gospels don't tell us that. So 33 years old, here's something that I ask you to think about today. Jesus lives 33 years on this earth, and we only know about three of those years. Jesus is no less than the second person of the Blessed Trinity come down to earth. God himself walks the earth, the most important event in all of history, not to mention the long-awaited Messiah, centuries and centuries in the waiting. And he lives in this earth 33 years, and 30 of those years we know almost nothing about. Have you ever wondered what Jesus did with all those years? Do you ever wonder if there's any stories that God would want us to know, or if there were any things that Jesus did that God would want us to know about? Anything at all? Answer? Yes. One thing. One thing above all else that God wants us to know about all those years that Jesus lived, about which we know almost nothing. He wants us to know that he lived in a family, performing absolutely ordinary tasks day in and day out with no fanfare, no acclaim, no paparazzi, no press corps. Okay, consider this. Whenever God acts, he acts in a deliberate, sovereign manner. Jesus lived 30 out of his 33 years in an ordinary home, in a family, because God wanted to. And don't think for a moment that there's not an important lesson in that. It shows us just how important to God are ordinary things. You know, I'll go around sometimes to young people. I used to teach high school, for example, and I would ask them what you want to be when you grow up. And they give you all kinds of different answers, but you want to know one thing that's almost always in their answer. I want to be famous, they say. I want to be famous. I want to be someone who's well known. Fascinating that God could not care less about celebrity. Above all else, God favors ordinary things, and he favors life in a family. Here today, on the week after Christmas, we celebrate the Feast of the Holy Family. Jesus, Mary, Joseph in their home at Nazareth, and as we say in our opening prayer in the Mass, the Church gives us the Holy Family as an example to imitate. And in the closing prayer, it's even stronger. It says we should imitate always the example of the Holy Family. Question for you here today. Doesn't that seem almost impossible? I mean, how on earth, right? With Mary, the Virgin Mother, with Joseph, the foster father, with Jesus Christ, the incarnate Word, how on earth is that an example that anybody can imitate? I was talking to a lady once. She had all these problems. And in the course of our conversation, I told her, you know, something about imitating the Holy Family. She got mad at me. She got mad at me. She said, Mary and Joseph only had one kid and he was perfect. So it's great for a holy picture. But honestly, isn't it just pastel piety? Isn't it something that, you know, just doesn't work in the real world, right? Right? Wrong. No. There's one way and one way above all that we're supposed to imitate the Holy Family. And that's in the holiness of the Holy Family. When the Church tells us to imitate the Holy Family, it's not giving us, you know, advice. If you want advice about how to be a family, you'll find no shortage of advice in the self-help section of any decent bookstore. They'll tell you how to be balanced. They'll tell you how to be integrated, right?
They'll tell you how to get along well with one another. But this is not the feast of the well-integrated family. Right? This is not the feast of the psychologically well-adjusted family. It's not the feast of the balanced family. It's the feast of the holy family. So what we want to understand, what we have to understand, is the meaning of that word holy. Because honestly, that's all that matters. What does holy mean? You know, we hear this Vatican Council II calls us to a universal call to holiness. What is holy? Long story short, holy means set apart. Set apart for God. Take this altar, for example. Altar of God is a holy thing. Everybody agree? Yes, of course. It's because it's set apart for sacred use. Now picture this. Picture tomorrow morning, I saunter up to the holy altar of God and use it as a table to have my morning coffee. Something wrong with this picture? Yes. It's set apart. It shouldn't be used for ordinary things. Chalice on the altar. Everybody knows the chalice the priest uses on the altar is a holy thing. Holds the blood of Christ. Picture for a moment that I use that same chalice to crack open an ice-cold Coca-Cola. Drink it down on a hot summer day. Something wrong with this picture? Yes. It's set apart. It's set apart for sacred things. It belongs to God. Now, holy things are fine. But what God really wants is a holy heart. What God really wants is that you are set apart for Him. And you want to know how you do that? It's very simple. Holy means when your will and God's will are in perfect parallel. When what you would do or say is what God would do or say. That's when you belong to Him. Now, let's take a look at what that looks like in each of the persons of the Holy Family. Start with Joseph. By far the easiest one to understand, right? The easiest one. We don't know very much about St. Joseph. You know, Joseph doesn't have a single quotation in all the New Testament. I once bet my students, I said, I'll give you $100 to the first one of you to find a quotation from St. Joseph of the New Testament. Safest bet I ever made, right? And they're all frantically flipping through the New Testament trying to find a quote from St. Joseph. Joseph doesn't say a word. We know almost nothing about him, but what we do know about St. Joseph shows us that he's a man who belonged to God. You know, nobody warned Joseph how hard his life was going to be. Nobody told Joseph in advance that his betrothed, the Blessed Virgin Mary, would be found to be with child. Joseph found out about that from town gossip. Imagine how hard that must have been. And nobody told Joseph that at the last minute he would have to take Mary to Bethlehem for the child to be born, where of course there was no room at the inn. And nobody told Joseph that the moment the Christ child was born, that the only authority in the land was out to kill him. You know, it's really funny, but when God has someone he loves very, very much, he sends them crosses. He sends them crosses. If you seem to live from one hardship to the next, right, would you be surprised if I told you to take heart at such a reality? God sends crosses into the lives of those he loved. There's a woman, anecdotal story, she's talking to Mother Teresa about some tragedy in her life, and Mother Teresa turns to her and says, well, you know, this is just the sweet kiss of Jesus, to which the woman replies, well, would you please tell Jesus to stop kissing me? But nobody told Joseph that his life would be so hard. But Joseph showed he loved God in return by how he responded, and we should too. Not in complaint, but in silent, trusting faith with his eyes always on the Lord. By the way, the life of St. Joseph is an example of one of the great secrets, namely that the great people of the kingdom of heaven are not necessarily going to be known while they live on this earth. Most of them live in secret and hiding. But Pope Benedict once said that if you ever want to know now who the great people of the kingdom of heaven will be, if you ever want to know, so to speak, who the celebrities of the next life are going to be, he says there's three things you could look for. Three things. Number one, look for people who give quiet, generous, joyful service. Ever know anybody who just gives and gives and gives and gives? Asks for no acclaim or no attention or no thanks for themselves and does so joyfully? Stand back. That person's going to be a star in the kingdom of heaven. That's St. Joseph. That's something we can imitate, right? That's your will and God's will in perfect parallel. Then, of course, there's the Blessed Mother. Very hard to capture the holiness of the Blessed Mother. She outshines all the other saints in holiness like, you know, the moon outshines the stars at night. It's not even close. They say that the Blessed Mother is like the mirror of God Himself. She's such a perfect image of who God is. It's like God had a mirror. That's how holy she is. But Pope John Paul II tells us there's four ways that we can all imitate the holiness of the Blessed Mother. First of all, she actively seeks God's will. Doesn't seek to minimize it, doesn't seek to cut and run. Sometimes I think that we treat God like He comes from the IRS. Give Him as little as we can possibly give and just be done with Him. You know, John Henry Cardinal Newman, he once said that the endeavor of most people is not to do God's will, but rather to do their own will without upsetting God too much. The Blessed Mother, however, she wants God's will, you know, the way a starving man wants something to eat, the way a man dying of thirst wants something to drink. She sees it as good. That's something we can imitate. That's holy. Number two, she says yes to God before she knows what she's getting into. Angel appears to the Blessed Mother, asks her if she'll be the Mother of God. She says yes. She has no idea at that moment what her future is going to hold. But she doesn't care. Trusts God implicitly. That's the way God acts with us. Notice, when Jesus calls His apostles, when He calls His disciples, what does He say? He looks at them, He says, come follow me. He doesn't tell them where He's leading. He doesn't tell them what's going to happen next. He doesn't tell them what's going to happen next week. And He does the same thing for us today. He asks us to trust Him because He can be trusted. That's holy. That's something we can imitate. Thirdly, Blessed Mother adjusts her whole life to fit God's will instead of asking God to adjust His will to fit her life, which is the problem so much of the church today. You know, the church is out of touch. The church is out of touch with the modern times. And, you know, wouldn't it be so much nicer if God, you know, just conveniently changed His will to fit my perceived lifestyle? No, it wouldn't. You want to know why? Because it's by adjusting ourselves to God's will that we're formed into His image. Blessed Mother constantly, every single day, the fathers of the church say that when the Blessed Mother brought Jesus into the temple, like we just heard here in the gospel, that Simeon, that wise old man, told her at that moment all of the sufferings that the child Jesus would go through. Every single day she woke up knowing what he would face and saying yes to God day after day after day. That's holy. That's something we can imitate. Fourthly, and perhaps most importantly, the best way to imitate the holiness of the Blessed Mother, she perseveres. Her yes to God is just as real when the angel appears to her as when Jesus is being crucified and taken down off the cross, as when Jesus ascends into heaven. Something we often forget about. And she was left behind on this earth for decades, praying for the infant church, helping us in its weakness. That's holy. That's something we can imitate. Now, lastly, the holiness of Christ Himself. This is in a whole other league. But did you know that there's only one story in all of Jesus' life that tells about what He was like when He was a child? I hope you already know that was the story of when Jesus was found in the temple. And they're going home from their pilgrimage to Jerusalem to visit the temple back to Nazareth. And Mary thinks the child is with Joseph, and Joseph thinks the child is with Mary, and they meet up at the end of the day, and they thought, look at one another, and they said, I thought you had the kid. Back they go to Jerusalem, only to find Jesus teaching the elders in the temple, seated. Now consider, when you're seated, in ancient Judaism, that's the position of the teacher. Someone somewhere among the scholars of the law invited Jesus to sit down after having heard him speak and teach him. And then Mary and Joseph, they walk up to Jesus and they say, where were you? We've been looking like crazy for you for the past 3 days. And what does Jesus say in reply? Very first words Jesus ever utters are a question. Why were you looking for me? It's almost the exact same thing Jesus says when he rises from the dead. very first thing Jesus says after he rises from the dead, why were you looking for me? Don't you know that you shouldn't be looking for the living among the dead? But you know what that question means? Long story really short. Whenever Jesus addresses those words to somebody, it means you don't know me anywhere like near as well as I wish you knew me. And he can say that to everybody because he's got some holiness to teach. Following the Lord, his will and God's will in perfect parallel, even to death, death on a cross, that's the meaning of the word holy. That's something we can imitate. You know, here on the Feast of the Holy Family, there's this incredible temptation to just bewail and bemoan the state of the family in the world today. And I easily could have done that, right? Talk about just how bad everything is. But you want to know what? That doesn't do any good. This world was never made a better place because somebody complained about it. What does matter? It's only one thing that matters. Your response to God's voice. It's hard to be a holy family in the world today. Secular world around you does not share your values. Plenty of the members of your own family do not share your values. Very, very hard. But thankfully, none of us is called to fix the state of the family in the world today. That's nobody's job description. In fact, your job description isn't even to fix the state of your own family. Your job description is to fix the state of your own soul. That's something we can do. That's holy. There was an anecdote, I don't think I've told you this before, but it came from one of the monks in ancient Egypt long, long ago. And it goes like this. He says, when I was a young man, I dreamed that I'd go out and change the world. But then I found that I couldn't. And so I said, well, you know, if I can't change the world, well, then I'll change my country. And I found out that I couldn't. And I said, well, if I can't change my country, well, then I'll change my town. I discovered that I couldn't. And I said, well, if I can't change my town, well, then I'll change my family. And I discovered that I couldn't. Until at last I said, well, if I can't change my family, at least I'll try to change myself. And I discovered that I could. And now that I'm old, I've realized only too late that if I'd first changed myself, that might have changed my family, which might have changed my town, which might have changed my country, which might have changed the world. The only thing that matters is your response to the Lord. There's much that could be said about the family. Parents, the first teachers of their children in the ways of the faith, don't ever forget that God has given that child an immortal soul and put you in charge. It's a tremendous responsibility. There are some things that we only learn in a family, right? Among which, first and foremost, that you are unconditionally loved. And it's funny, if you don't learn that at home, you never learn that. It's meant to be learned at home. You learn that you have a responsibility to somebody more than just yourself. Things that problems no government can solve if they're not solved in the home first. So many things we could say about the family, but one thing above all else, your response to the voice of God. That's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.